Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. Music in the background is called Wild Arugula. That's right, Wild Arugula. On today's show, how to control spiders naturally. You know, spiders are a very important part of our ecosystem. They will eat many times their weight in insect every day. While most true insects have six legs, spiders have eight. They will vary in size from being very tiny to very large, depending on where in the world you happen to run across each other. I would rank spiders in fourth place behind ants, which is in first place, cockroaches second place, fleas are in third place, but they're ahead of snails, gophers, and so on as to the most feared and disliked pest. Important thing to realize is that there are more good beneficial spiders than harmful spiders. A good rule of thumb that I've learned over the many years is that if the spider is not bothering you, you don't bother it. So here's a list of some spiders and how to control them on your plants and in and around your house. Red spiders. These are tiny spiders, are reddish in color, and are found on indoor plants which have very little air circulation. Usually the plants are under undernutrition and underwater. Overwatering would tend to damage the plants more than the spiders would. To control, concentrate more on the health of the soil and the health of the plant and less on controlling the red spiders. However, if you have an unusually large amount of red spiders per plant, it's time to make a few changes. One, repot the plant into a new compost-type potting soil mixture. Two, before you repot, bathe the plant in a mild soapy water solution. You can spray the solution directly on the spiders, or you can bathe the plant, the entire plant, the pot, and all of it with warm water with a dash of Dr. Bronner's soap would be harmless to humans. Brown recluse spiders. Well, make sure you wear gloves and work in areas such as a garage, wooded areas, etc. Avoid contact whenever possible. Use natural soaps to control. You just have to find the right strength. The Arizona brown spider, avoid them at all costs. Wear gloves when working near possible spider sites. Can be controlled by using soaps such as Dr. Bronner's peppermint soap. Spray directly on spiders will kill them. You want to, again, learn the right strength to mix. Garden grade, food grade diatomaceous earth works really well here also, and there are lots of other different types of natural sprays that you can use. Essential oils work really well too. Black widow should, of course, be left alone if possible. The males are harmless. If you do have a black willows, or if you think you have brown, the curse is always really good to get a professional organic pest control person to come. The same thing with tarantulas. If you have a tarantula, I would not only leave it alone, but I would contact someone to come and take it away for you. So here are some basics that you can things that you can use. By the way, the song in the background is called Ancient Vegetables. Here are some of the natural sprays that you can use. You can use Orange TKO. Orange TKO Citrus is a really nice, clean citrus cleaning product, but it's made from citrus oil. It can be used. I've been recommending it for many years now for a wide variety of things. It will kill them on contact. You just, again, got to learn the right strength. Usually one tablespoon per gallon will work. I would try, you can make it as strong as one tablespoon per quart of water. Garlic will also kill them on contact. You can avoid being bitten by the spiders if you eat garlic. Another trick would be to take a clove of garlic, cut it in half, put each half clove in your shoe. You'll smell like garlic. Unfortunately, everybody else will know it too. So that might work to some extent. One way you can make the garlic, you take an ounce of crushed garlic in a pantyhose, let it sit in a gallon of water for about an hour, then spray the water. I wouldn't be using the garlic so much inside the house as outside the house. The citrus is much nicer smell inside the house, trust me. Outside is great. Outside around the eaves of the house, around the outside of the house, it stops them from getting in. Any natural Castile soap will also work also. Again, I use the Dr. Bronner soap because they're wonderful. The lavender, the peppermint, the eucalyptus, the almond, you know, the tea tree oil, all of the varieties. Just pick the one you like, make the right strength. Usually I found that 1 ounce in a gallon of water will also will work. You can definitely put an ounce in a quart of water. It's very strong. You don't really need that. In a quart of water, I would probably put maybe a couple of tablespoons, 2 or 3 tablespoons, to see how that works. Cedar oil will also kill them. Just be careful not to make it too strong, or you will get sick when the strong odor is very, very strong. I would try in a gallon of water, probably do a tablespoon. That's really strong. And again, I would probably not do the cedar oil inside so much as I would outside. Again, they're very strong. So the part of the scenario too is you want to make sure you locate the source. So I would do a yearly cleanup, spring cleaning in the garage, in the areas you have things stashed, stacked up, you know. Go through that. If you get rid of the source, you'd be better. You'd be better off in controlling the spiders. So make sure you look around the house. I would get somebody to do it for you. Somebody to do check out the if water's leaking. It will also attract the spiders. Take a look at the screens. Repair any broken screens. Any way that they're getting into the house. Garden grade or food grade diatomaceous earth works really well outside. There's also spider traps that you can buy, you can place around. I like the ultimate flea trap, which not only catches fleas, but because of the way the light system works, it will catch spiders and various other things. So that's one way for you to for you to tell if you're coming back. So I would. Once you're done with this, I would get an ultimate flea trap, plug one into the wall in the garage, say somewhere, and every once in a while check it. If you start seeing more spiders on there, you know they're back. So that would be basically it for today on how to control spiders naturally. A few people have been asking me about that question, so I decided to do their show today. It's all in my ebook, How to Control Spiders Naturally, which members should have. And of course, you're always welcome to go to the store and buy it.
Attention gardeners, how would you like to learn how to get rid of unwanted pests like ants and mosquitoes without using harmful pesticides? With the growing concern about West Nile virus, killer bees, and the use of synthetic pesticides, there is a better way. Go to www.invisiblegardener.com. Andy Lopez, the Invisible Gardener, provides alternatives to chemical products using natural ingredients you may already have at home. Do you have gardening questions or problems? Get the help you need at www.invisiblegardener.com. Join the Invisible Gardeners of America and take their online gardening classes. The Invisible Gardener has helped gardeners since 1972, and he can help you too. Visit www.invisiblegardener.com. You can talk directly to him about your gardening questions right here on The Invisible Gardener every Saturday morning. And you can reach Andy Lopez, the Invisible Gardener, anytime at www.invisiblegardener.com. Check it out on the website. That's www.invisiblegardener.com. www.invisiblegardener.com.
Hi, this is Andy. Make sure you go to Invisible Gardener. That's GARDENER.com. Thank you. Bye.
Hello.
Good morning, Andy. It's time for you to start your radio show. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you're depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you're dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk to you.
Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. On today's show, we're going to be doing how to protect your trees from the drought. So don't go away. Be right back.
By the one light in all, our earth to embrace, at the call of all nations, where our children can play in a world without war, where we stand hand in hand in the grace of creation, where the rivers run clean through the forests of green, where the cities stand tall in the clear skies of freedom. Oh, say do our hearts sing out for harmony and love forever on the planet of our birth, blessed with on Earth.
That was Earth Anthem by Stephen Longfellow Fisk. Visit his website at fiskmusic.com. A lot of folks have asked me to play that again since I haven't been playing in a while, so there it is. Then I'm also going to play How Do You Want Your World before the show is over with, because they want that one too. I agree.
Don't panic, it's organic. Go away, bats. Nature intended it. Don't panic.
The main thing that I see that's happening so far is that with the drought comes along the fact that we've been, like for here in California, we've been taking the groundwater out through wells, siphoning the water out. It's taking a long time for that groundwater to get down there, and it'll take a long time for it to get back down there again. We need to control that, but that's another issue. But what's really happening is that the trees, the root systems are not being able to tap into this underground water, and as the drought moves along, like wintertime is almost over with already, and we're still in January here, and it's starting to get warm already. You're going to find it's going to get warmer sooner, it'll be hotter longer, and it's going to dry out faster, and it'll be less water, and less water down to the root system. The big trees are not finding the water down below where they used to get it before. So the first thing that I would tell people is to provide deep watering through a drip system. Don't do these 10-minute watering overhead. Sure, it provides them some water to the root systems that are close to the surface, and they get some water and they don't entirely dry out. But if your deep roots die, you'll die too. The tree will die also. So water needs to get down as deep as possible. So I use what I call tree vents. These are clay drain pipes about a foot long and 4 inches wide. And they're made of clay. Clay is porous and it allows the water to seep sideways as well as down. They get placed midway between the trunk and the drip line. Each tree should get about 4 of them planted at around 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. Now, you can say each tree. Well, it depends. If you have a group of trees, you can figure out a way to place them so that they all get the watering. Now, a foot deep is not very deep, but it does get the water down deeper. You can do 2 feet, even 3 feet. There have been tree vents that are deeper, but they make them out of the plastic ones, and the water goes down really deep. And you want to have it sideways also, too. So if you can do the 1 or 2 feet deep, hook a 2 gallon per hour drip head, then you want to water at least 1 hour per week. I say at least, depends on the type of soil that you have. Because if you have it on for an hour and it's dripping down and you find that the water is not percolating all the way down, it's just overflowing, you may have a hard pan. Hard pan is another issue we'll cover. But you want the water just to percolate down, so you may have to build it up. You may do, say, a half hour and then slowly build it up to an hour. Or you may find that an hour, it's all gone, so you may have to give it 2 hours. 2 hours is the ideal amount of watering. You only really need to do that maybe twice a month, right, every other week. Once a week if it's a really, really bad scenario, you know. But you also, it's important that you allow it to dry out in between times. So that's one of the key issues you want to do there. Another thing that I didn't get to write it in my column, but you want to do a fertigation unit you want to attach to the drip. See, a fertigation is a combination of fertilizer and irrigation. So these are units that are meant to be inject fertilizer into the sprinkler system. And of course, when I'm talking about fertilizer, I mean organic systems. So this is an ideal scenario, an ideal way to add what's missing in the soil. Because one of the things that's happening to the soil as it dries up is that the bacteria dies. If bacteria dies, the soil goes dead. That's what we mean by live soil, dead soil. It's the bacteria that's alive, makes the soil alive, the microbes makes the soil alive, they eat the minerals that then becomes available to the plants, because the plants have their own bacteria on their root hairs too, also, see? So one of the things, the reasons why the tree vents really work really well is I call them microbe centers, you know, micro little colonizers. So in each tree vent should be your microbe colony is what I call it. This is where you put your compost and your rock dust along with your good organic tree fertilizer. I also place coffee beans here that have been infused with bacteria. I'll be talking to you about that in another show. We want the tree vent to be placed now, so to not only for deep watering, but it's also a place for the microbes to get established. Okay, and if you put any chemical fertilizer in there, we'll kill it. So what you're doing is you're setting up a way to rebacterialize the soil, because the soil is constantly, it's under attack, killing the bacteria. So you have a way to provide deep watering, right, slow watering. That's the other thing too, is that you need to make sure that you have a garden that you filter the water. I'll talk to you about that in a second. So you have deep watering going through, percolating through. You make a mixture in the tree vents so that the water percolates through. And this mixture of being compost and rock dust, because the compost is normally the way you do it, right? The normal way to do it is you make compost with rock dust. But you get animal manure, different types of animal manure, the better, because they're different types of microbes. You get the rock dust, you put the two together in an environment that they go nuts. That would be their composting process. Once you're done, that compost is bacterially rich, minerally rich compost. See, that's what normally should go into your tree vents. And then you can add organic fertilizer to that. You don't even need organic fertilizer if you do it right, but yeah, an organic fertilizer would be very good to provide a variety of other nutrients that may lack. But usually the compost is not being made properly these days, and that's another show coming up on compost, you know. So that's why I always add rock dust, compost to the rock dust to the compost, see, and make sure that it has the two together. The compost that I buy, I also make sure that the compost is alive. You want live compost. Anything you buy in the store, it's in the plastic bag, is not alive. If it can't breathe, it's not alive. You see? So I usually buy... I used to make compost for a long time. It's called Organa. I don't do it anymore because I'm too old for this kind of stuff. My doctor says, don't lift up anything more than 5 pounds. And I said, okay. So I have a student who took over the compost production and makes excellent live compost with worms and everything in it is still alive. And Raktas added to it very rich, bacterially rich products. I take that. Even then, I still add Raktas to it to make sure that it's really covered. That's what you want, a microbial colony, constantly bring the bacteria back to the soil and the water, makes it happy, happy down in there. It'll last longer through the drought. Those trees will roots will get their water. They won't die. You can stretch the water out so the tree will survive the drought, because the drought won't last forever. So what I mentioned before is that you want to get a garden filter. So there's a really good garden filter on the market called Garden Grow. You hook that right into your inline system, so that when the water goes out, you have clean water going out to the trees and to your garden. Ideally, you do it for your whole property, but that's very expensive. So you just get the Garden Grow filter, hook it into your drip system, and you got it. 55,000 gallons that needs to be cleaned. The other thing I would do is to apply foliar applications once a month if possible. Find your local spraying company, organic spraying company. That would be me. I do that. I've been doing that since the sixth grade. As I got the Don't Panic, It's Organic, when I started spraying things. So I have a spraying rig. In the rig, I tell people I don't spray anything stronger than coffee, cream, and sugar. And coffee, okay? So I spray I spray these bacteria and I spray these minerals. I actually spray a product called Super Seaweed, which I invented. So that's got all the bacteria. It doesn't have the bacteria in it. It has the minerals in it, because the bacteria I have the bacteria in suspended state. So once you add it to water, add it to oxygen, the bacteria wake up and they do their thing. So once I put it in my sprayer, it gets oxygenated, the bacteria go nuts. If I let it sit there for too long, you can smell it. It's like making a tea, right? I spray that. Through the foliar application, you can get the minerals to the plants. What also helps them, because what happens is that the drip system, by the time you get to the roots of the trees, the roots are starting to die off. That means the bacteria and the root hairs, everything's not working. It's going to take a while for that microbe and everything to bring everything back. In the interim, minerals are missing. That's where you do the foliar application. You can do all kinds of really cool things. You can spray rock dust tea. You can spray compost tea. Lots of ways to get the minerals and bacteria back onto the plants. Raises the Brix level. Remember, we talked about Brix level before. The other thing you want to do is around the whole place, you want to apply rock dust, compost, and mulch. You want to use a Azalea Gardenia mix, which is a nice acid mulch. The mulch can also come from ground up trees. You know how the tree companies, they do a lot of grinding. Just see if you can get something nice and clean. Use that as a mulch to cover it. The idea is you protect the soil from the sun.
Attention gardeners, how would you like to learn how to get rid of unwanted pests like ants and mosquitoes without using harmful pesticides? With the growing concern about West Nile virus, killer bees, and the use of synthetic pesticides, there is a better way. Go to www.invisiblegardener.com. Andy Lopez, the Invisible Gardener, provides alternatives to chemical products using natural ingredients you may already have at home. Do you have gardening questions or problems? Get the help you need at www.invisiblegardener.com. Join the Invisible Gardeners of America and take their online gardening classes. The Invisible Gardener has helped gardeners since 1972, and he can help you too. Visit www.invisiblegardener.com. You can talk directly to him about your gardening questions right here on The Invisible Gardener every Saturday morning, and you can reach Andy Lopez, The Invisible Gardener, anytime at www.invisiblegardener.com. Check it out on the website. That's www.invisiblegardener.com. www.invisiblegardener.com.
Hi, this is Andy. Make sure you go to Invisible Gardener. That's GARDENER.com. Thank you. Bye. I started my business in the sixth grade, doing everything organically, and by the ninth grade I had 150 customers. I developed Don't Panic It's Organic somewhere during that time frame. And even then, there was a big argument whether or not organically grown food and conventionally grown food were different, other than, you know, the obvious difference in terms of pesticide use, you know, the damage it does to the environment, whether pesticide is safe or not, even though they say it's safe. And it's still pretty much going on now. And in a recent LA Times article, a columnist wrote that there is no difference between organically grown food and conventionally grown food. He cites several studies that prove there is no difference between the nutritional levels, and he cites doctors, and they all say the same thing. Eating conventionally grown produce is not only safe, but just as nutritious. It is besides the fact that it totally ignores environmental issues and health issues of not just the consumer but the workers that pick it, as well as the fact that powerful business forces are at work here to keep the public confused, in my opinion. Let's ignore these issues for now, and let's take a look at what is wrong with this idea that organic food and conventionally grown food is equal. First off, not every organic farmer knows what they are doing, just like not everyone that makes compost knows what they are doing. You are only as good a gardener, farmer, as the compost you make. Not all composts are equal, just like not all organic farmers are equal. Some are actual organic farmers, while others are in name only. Many farmers have decided to go organic because they will then be able to sell their products for more. But if I were to ask them just one question, and if they failed that question, then they would not only have the same problems as the conventionally grown, but their produce, their food, their product would not be any more nutritional than them. Especially if the conventional farmer either does not make or use compost, but also does not apply rock dust. You know, I talk a lot about rock dust, I talk a lot about compost. There's a basic law of nature that says you get out what you put in. You want trace minerals, then you put that into the soil. However, you cannot just throw rock dust everywhere and expect the minerals to then become available to the plants. Even rock dust, all rock dust are not the same. Some are rich in calcium, but low in iron. Others are higher in other minerals. It all depends from what part of the world and how it was made that determines what minerals it has. Okay, so the article, as well as the studies, do not even mention soil depletion. I wonder why. If your soil is depleted of minerals, then the produce growing on it will also be depleted in minerals. I'm not making this stuff up. There is a key to this problem, okay? In the article, which mentions taste, lady says, I like it because it tastes better. The better the taste, the more minerals it has, i.e. C-Brix levels versus mineral articles that I wrote. Taste tells us we should eat it or not. We have developed over the years to eat what is sweet, what tastes sweet, and not what tastes bitter. Pests have developed along the same lines, except that nature in her wisdom made it such that when a plant has high Brix, it would have a high sugar level, which in turn means higher minerals, which in turn means higher complex carbohydrates. Insects, by the way, and you're thinking, wait a minute, sugar, ants, they like that, insects like that. Here's the key to it, is the difference between complex carbohydrates and simple carbohydrates, okay? So yeah, they're going to have higher, they may have a higher, more sugar level for right food for the insects because it'll be simple carbohydrates, but not if you, if it was rich in minerals, which would then make it complex carbohydrates, and the insects cannot eat that and they would die. So no insects, no pests. So remember, high nitrogen fertilizer is bad because they make the plants grow fast. They're weak and deficient in the minerals. Okay? So when I started my business back in 1956, I heard the same from the forces that chemical and organic produce are equal in nutritional value. What's a little pesticide? That has not changed over the many years. You really want to know, then I would test. What I would do is I would, you know, have a controlled test. I would actually get a real organic farmer that knows what they're doing, conventional farmer that supposedly knows what they're doing. I wouldn't worry about getting a neutral. I mean, somebody didn't know what they were doing, because, yeah, you're not going to get the results from anything. But I would get those two folks, actually have them grow it. One of the problems with these surveys is really a survey of a survey. The latest survey that this article refers to is really a survey of all the surveys. They took 300 surveys, put them together, and did the survey of the surveys. You look at all the surveys, and very few, if any, have actually gone through the process of growing everything up and stuff, growing organically over here and growing a chemical over here. And even then, who are they to know? Are they good farmers? Are they actual is there any one of them in the survey an actual organic farmer? Or are they just saying, doesn't make any difference. You just grow organically over here. How are you growing organically? Well, we're not using any pesticides. And we went on and got some organic fertilizer and put that down. See what I'm saying? It's like, so you have to have a skilled organic farmer that knows what they're doing. I would try one of the Rodale Group, right, or the Desmith Valley. It's 40 acres organic, been grown for years, or the Biodynamic Institute, you know. Any of these folks, the Permaculture Institute, will be happy to show you how to do it right. And you know, there's another word that wasn't even mentioned in the article, and that's sustainability. You know what sustainability is, right? Okay, so, you know, here we have a chemically grown, conventionally grown produce, and if they don't put the rock dust in the mineral, and that soil is going to be depleted more and more every year, and they're not going to get, they may get something that looks like produce, but there's nothing in there. And you can't tell me that that's the same as when you do a real organic farmer, which you are constantly building the soil, working on it, get it so it's sustainable. I mean, every year it gets better and better and better and better. And yeah, you have the mineral contents are constantly high and there, and you can't tell me that's not going to be the same. So I rest my case. Thank you very much for listening to my show. This is Andy Lopez.
Don't panic. It's organic. Go way back. Nature intended it. Don't panic.
Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. This is a special edition, and I'm calling it The Details. So many of you may or may not know that I do a local service here in Malibu. And it's a monthly service. And so I'm going to explain to you what I did, and more specifically, I have a person who wants to know what I am billing her for, the details. She says she won't pay me until I give her the details. So I guess natural spraying, organic spraying of your property is not enough. So I'm going to give you the details. Unfortunately, in an invoice, you don't have room for be putting everything down. And this is a rather unique system, so I'm going to go over it. So there's basically two parts. It has to do with the first part is the plants, and the second part is the soil. So people say, what is it you do? Well, what I do is, in essence, is I take away the responsibility of the, quote, gardeners, and I do all the organic, all the fertilization, which is always organic, all the natural pest control of the trees and the property, make everything healthy. Help them avoid problems, tell them what to do, how to properly control water. They have to use compost and mulch. The only thing I don't do, I tell them you need to apply the compost, you need to put the mulch down in order for the system to work. So when I deal with the soil, there are lots of different things that I apply to the soil. So this particular has to do with the plants and the soil. So when I first do a property, like in this case, I went to the property. The first thing I do is I spray the plants. By spraying the plants, you get nutrients, minerals into the plants through foliar application because the soil is not working. So that's what I did this visit. That was the very first visit. So what I sprayed, and just so you get an idea, so that basically I do is I spraying four times a year. It's called super seaweed. Okay, so this, I also spray four times a year with the different types of super seaweed called bloom. So the super seaweed is called micro that I spray four times a year, and the super seaweed that I call bloom that I spray four times a year. Super seaweed is an invention of mine, invented in the sixth grade. And as for the ingredients of super seaweed, it's really a long list of stuff that I've been working on for, I don't know, I'm 67. And so there are many, many things that go in there, and so it's enough to say super seaweed. And I tell people, you want to know what's in super seaweed or get some idea of what's in super seaweed, you can go up to my website, invisiblegardener.com. You'll see in the bottom it says super seaweed micro along the menus there. It gives you a list of all the different organisms in super seaweed. Okay? I call it primordial soup for a reason. Okay? So basically, it's taken me a long time to develop this, to get this together. It's taken me many, many years of looking for things. I've been doing this since I started my business in the sixth grade. And by the 1970, I had the name Invisible Gardener already. And in the sixth grade, I had over 150 customers. I started doing a spraying service then. I started buying different things in the store, you know, and spraying them. I bought seaweed. And that's how I started making super seaweed. Super seaweed is basically a blend. Initially, it started off with five types of seaweed. I'm still using that. But I'm very cautious now because the ocean is more and more polluted. So Eventually, it may not be any seaweed around to use, so it may be called something different. But super seaweed is basically a microbiological activator. Okay, so, and super seaweed is, I call it primordial soup because I have basically discovered a certain type of ancient bacteria. And so I cultivate that like I do yogurt. I make this blend. This blend has bacteria and enzymes. It has the endomycorrhiza, which I give you the names of it if you like. There's at least, the types that I have, let me see, there's, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, so there's 9 different types of endomycorrhiza. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. 18 different type of ectomycorrhiza. And this is not going to be a class, so I'm not going to tell you the difference between endomycorrhiza and ectomycorrhiza. But that's what these are there. So those are the basic ones in there. And then the microorganisms, okay? And then I also add a certain type of micro called there's two different types of microbes I add to it. These are beneficial microbes. These are specifically for disease control. Then there are other different types of microbes that I add, which I have over the years basically collected. And I have 12 different types of beneficial microbes, which, by the way, somebody else already has. It's called BM. One person has the effective microorganism, the trademark for it, and this person has the beneficial microorganism trademark. But, you know, I can give you names. It won't help you at all of what these are. I mean, there's only so much detail that I'm willing to give out. Like I said, it's not a class. And so we have the endomycorrhiza, Glumis intradaceus, Glumis macea, Glumis aggregatum, Glumis monosporum, Glumis clarium, Glumis desortocola, Gisopora migrarita. I don't know why they call it Gisopora migrarita. It might maybe named after the lady. Then this Gisopora entocatium, the Phaglormius. In the ectomycorrhizal world, you have Pistolius, which is a really cool ectomycorrhiza. Rhizopogian, R. litocolius, amylopigian. If you want to look them up, these are listed on the website. I give you the list, the link. Look it up. You'll see that they're written right down there. And so of course, I use the different types of seaweed. So I use, seaborne, I have sea crop, I have a variety of other different types of liquid seaweed. Also, I use edible seaweed for human consumption, figuring that it would be cleaner, you know, than the type for plants and stuff, you know, so... and I use that, and the liquid seaweeds, some of them come in a liquid form, but most of them are already in a powdered form. There are various different types of seaweed. So like I said, the ones I've been using for a long time is Maxi Crop is one of them. It's a really wonderful seaweed. And I also get the Maxi Crop with iron. Okay. And then there's two or three other different types. Alaskan seaweed. I get seaweed from Canada, actually from Iceland. And then I also use a variety of other seaweed products, which I basically made with different types of seaweed or different types, not necessarily seaweed, but like algae and kelp, things like that. So there are a variety of those products that I use. And this all goes into my super seaweed, okay? I also use in the super seaweed, I also have my rock dust blend, because I also make, I don't sell rock dust, I use it as part of the service. That's what part two is in the soil. But I also add it to this liquid seaweed that I make. The liquid seaweed, super seaweed, micro, is currently going for $140 a quart. I use 2.5 gallons of this stuff. Figure it out. In the seaweed, of course, I have all my different types of rock dust. I get rock dust from about 7 or 8 different types of rock dust from around the world, including the azomite, the glacial rock dust. And these are also the same thing I use in the soil. So I get a powdered version and a pelletized version. The pelletized version I apply to the soil. Powdered version I apply to the as a liquid, because I let the bacteria eat the minerals, and the liquid is a highly soluble microbiological, highly mineralized liquid. So not only does it have those in the super seaweed, but it also has agrigol. These are things that I discovered throughout my, I used to go to Fayetteville, Arkansas, as one of the speakers at the organic conference there. And the Nitron company would give it. So Nitron A35 is an enzyme product I started buying from them in the early 70s. Agrigol is another enzyme product. Nitron is made for the folks in Fayetteville, Arkansas. They're not there anymore. They since died. Frank is probably still there, but the lady died, but they sell it to another person who's making it. And Agrigol is made by the Smith brothers in Indiana, another different type of enzyme. These two enzymes by themselves are amazing, but mixed in together. So they're a part of super seaweed. And then, because I'm really crazy about this, I add Willard water. You can look up Dr. Willard. And Willard water is made for humans, but it's really highly soluble minerals, which I find wonderful for plants. And then on top of that, I get a mineral product, liquid minerals, from a doctor who sells minerals for humans. That goes into super seaweed. So the super seaweed is one of the things that I invented, but that's one of the things that I grow. So that's what I used on, one of the things I used on your property. When I first go to a property, I don't just go whole hog and do all kinds of things, because you have to work your way into it. So the first thing I do is I start foliar spraying. I spray the leaves of the plants, and I spray I also sprayed your lawn. I treated all the trees that are there. There are 2 trees there that were sick. So they got a little more treatment than the rest of the trees, which were fed. They were given by feedings. I don't use fertilizer. The micronutrients is more than enough. The bacteria that they get the minerals through their leaves. You're going to have a problem there, by the way. Your trees are going to die because they can't grow under that kind of sprinkler system that you have before. So that's one of the things I gave to them. I did that to the lawn. I did to whatever grasses you have there. And I soaked the 2 sick trees, and also did deep root feeding for them as well. Then when it comes to the soil, this is what I used on your place. I used 4 different types of rock dust. And if you want details as to what each type of rock dust is, then I'm, you know, you're welcome to listen to any of my Rock Dust shows. We can go over Rock Dust. But I use four different types of Rock Dust, actually maybe five or six different types of Rock Dust, because I buy the Rock Dust and I blend them together. Not only do I just blend Rock Dust together, I get endo and ecto mycorrhiza. The very same thing that I put in the seaweed, I also, liquid seaweed, I also get the powdered pelletized version and put that into the Rock Dust. I also add biochar to the Rock Dust. I also add earthworm castings to the Rock Dust. And I also add compost to this mixture. So this mixture is a very, is and also alfalfa meal, before I forget. Gets all blended together, and then I also added to that, I added, it's called MicroGrow. It's a soluble mycorrhiza. This particular one is in a powder form. I added 10 pounds of this. They're $89 a pound, but I buy a whole bunch at one time. So what my cost is none of your business, actually, you know. But you can look it up and you see what they're selling it for. And it took me a long time to find the right ones that I want because all the mycorrhizas are not the same. So, and then basically I also, this very same company is called Fungi, FUNGI.com. You can look it up. They sell mushroom fungi. Basically, you grow mushrooms. So the whole thing I do in the property, the way I bring the soil back to life is by growing mycelium. Mushrooms grow on the mycelium. That's how you can tell the soil is alive, because you have mushrooms coming up. That tells you the mycelium is in the soil. You need the mycelium to make the plants healthy, to control the disease and all that stuff. So basically what I'm doing is inoculating your property. Now, I can't go whole hog on this, because if I was to put a lot of it down, a lot of it dies. That's why it's important to do the compost and the mulching, which has not been done yet. That's one of the first things you do, is you bring compost, you bring the mulch. It's an organic sediment mix, which is what I told you should be using. I've already started the rock dust. You need to apply the compost and apply the azalea gardenia mix, and then you plant. So that's what I charged you for. And that's all the details I'm going to give you. I think, you know, it's also good. I'm doing this not for you, but I'm doing it for my listeners, because they like to know what it is that I'm doing. So basically, I'm bringing the soil back to life, which takes time. That soil of yours is dead. You put anything down there and they're dead. I'll pay you $100 for any earthworms I find. Yeah, you get earthworms where your lawn is because they're getting water, but not out there on the slopes where it's growing, where all the plants grew. So I bring the soil back to life. That takes time. I've got to control the water. You got to start bringing in compost and mulch, right? In the interim, I feed your plants foliarly. I do what it takes to keep them alive and healthy, and it does get better.
Okay, everybody. So this is Andy Lopez. Merry Christmas, everyone. We have one more show next week of the top, I guess they're the top 10 of my radio shows I've done in my whole, the last 10 years. I'm going to try to go back further and see if I can pull up some even better shows. So next week, you're going to be hearing some more top of my top 10 shows. So stay tuned for my Cosmic Spaceship show, okay? And so I'm hoping you enjoy it. You can always contact me at andylopez@invisiblegardener.com.